This is episode 67 and focuses on Stephen Harvey and colleagues' pedagogical case about Jenny. This is an audio version of the Peppern blog that can be found at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. This girl can, well, could. I focus on our sports as teachers and families, and on traditional sports, acts as a very real barrier to participation for some while widening it for others. Choosing one sport over another is an active decision, and it limits the ways in which children access different activities. Likewise, choosing not to do or value a sport, either in the family or the school or community, is also a decision. While it is impossible to do everything, we need to be aware that we are making decisions for the right reasons, which aren't always the same as our reasons. Jenny. Jenny's biggest love is field hockey. She's been playing for a while now and is beginning to receive some recognition for her ability. As a mature girl for a 13-year-old, she's been selected a year early for her regional development group. Indeed, the specialised coaches she gets to work with think she is talented. While Jenny is tasked with improving her skill, she seldom has access to facilities and opportunities at school to do this, and there is no teacher prepared to help her out and run a team. When she tries to use the school fields in her lunch times, she finds them taken up by boys' football kickabouts and has no place to play. In short, Jenny has achieved what she has achieved more or less off her own back, as the school doesn't really play much field hockey. The youngest team at a local club is the under-16s. She has had to self-fund her £13 a week cost to train at both her club and junior academy sessions. It's not that her parents aren't supportive of her, but they both work long hours and bring home a combined yearly income that places them below the average earnings for England. They are very supportive of their child's sporting aspirations, but unfortunately that child isn't Jenny, but is instead her brother. He is a footballer, a soccer player, and is in the academy of a well-known football club. He is also considered talented, and his parents and their small disposable income and one car are committed to getting him to all his training sessions and weekend matches. With all the money and resources going to her brother, Jenny has had to self-finance and rely on her friend's parents to get her to hockey training. Up until now, this has worked, but she is the only one of her friends to be selected for the regional development group and can no longer get a lift, which she needs because it's 30 miles away. For the first time, her hockey involvement needs her parents' physical support, but they have made their investment in her brother's football. The perceived status and perceived revenue that comes from professional football is such that her parents are not prepared to risk his chances at the big time to help her succeed. Boys and men's sports has much higher status, income and TV time than women's sport, and they are simply blinded to her sporting potential. That said, Jenny isn't blind to the images that she sees of athletic women, and she's beginning to aspire to an ideal body for herself. As an early developer, she has grown where many of her peers still hold on to their prepubescent figures. She constantly compares herself to them and the media profiles of high-profile athletes. She has started to skip meals and opts for physical activity over poor food choices. She is unhappy that her parents don't provide her with healthy options, but is determined to lose weight. Let's look at the pedagogical case in more detail. Jenny is on the cusp of something potentially big in terms of her elite sporting development, and the next few years will be critical. If she is able to focus on her talent and get the specialist support she needs, then she might make it into elite hockey. If not, then she has the potential to be a good player at a lower level team. That said, she also needs to be educated about eating and body shape, because her aspirations towards elite sport seem to focus too heavily on her body. In their chapter, Harvey and colleagues explore Jenny's pedagogical case from a physiological, a sociological, and a psychological perspective, before taking an overarching pedagogical view of Jenny. Physiologically, many national governing bodies, NGBs, have tried to model talent development and maximise sporting achievement through the long-term athlete development, LTAD, system. The NGB for hockey in the UK, despite the lack of any long-term evidence of the model's efficacy and its very narrow focus, based around skill, speed, suppleness, stamina and strength, have implemented the LTAD system. Jenny, at 13, is involved in hockey's LTAD system,
and she is currently at the training to train phase, and in 2 years she will be moving into the training to compete phase. Worryingly, at least according to the LTAD system, it may already be too late for Jenny to achieve her full genetic potential. Taking a different physiological stance, Harvey and colleagues suggest that while Jenny has learned many of the fundamental movement skills, she needs to address her physical training patterns quickly, or she may fail in her ambition to become an elite hockey player. Without specialised training, she, like most adolescent girls, will struggle to improve in strength, power and balance during stroke after puberty. Of particular concern is her lack of resistance training, which is needed for safer movement mechanics, and her ability to use stretch-shortening cycle actions, which is linked to her ability to land efficiently, absorb landing forces quickly, balance during ground contact, and enhance her proprioception, our sense of how our bodies are positioned, before producing a rapid, forceful takeoff. If she was able to work on these aspects with a specialist, she could increase her performances and reduce the risk of injury. According to research in sociology, sport is not the meritocratic, i.e. based on merit, activity that everyone supposes and through which everyone is allowed to play on a level playing field. The cream, unfortunately, does not always rise to the top. In Jenny's case, her relatively low socioeconomic background is an inhibiting factor. Costs play a part in participation. Costs in terms of time and money have a big impact on participation. Jenny has had to look for opportunities outside of a school, but this means that, on the whole, she hasn't been able to access sufficiently high-quality coaching and has had to fund her own passion for hockey, which also means she has had to balance work with play. Income, or the lack of it, has also limited the family's ability to help out and has limited the social network on which they can call to help with matters of transportation. Furthermore, income, or the perceived lack of it, in elite women's hockey is not as attractive as the possible income in professional men's football. Consequently, women's hockey does not have the same status and prestige as traditional male team sports. This is evidenced at lunchtimes at school, where the playing areas are dominated by young males playing football at the expense of non-playing, and therefore emasculated, boys and girls. In contrast, most of the young females, research suggests, spend time in a preoccupation with feminine ideals of body image, rather than in reclaiming these spaces. Jenny's case highlights, from a psychological perspective, a dysfunctional side of her athletic development. Both puberty and elite sport cast a spotlight on the physical construction of the self, with an estimated 50 to 80% of adolescent girls expressing a desire to become thinner. This period of enhanced body focus is particularly prevalent in sporting contexts, where there is social pressure to adopt a lean physique. There is increasing evidence to suggest that young athletes pay more attention to body image and diet, which in turn can lead to viewing their bodies in a distorted manner and displaying maladaptive eating behaviours. Indeed, the prevalence of eating disorders is significantly higher than would be found in the general population. Due to Jenny's early development, she is in danger of identifying herself as different to many of her peers. She sees a discrepancy between her ideal and her current self, which has increased her body dissatisfaction. This dissatisfaction has been linked to negative health behaviours, psychological well-being factors, low self-esteem, depressive moods, and negative eating behaviours. Her preoccupation with performance can also lead to a preoccupation with obtaining the perfect body to meet this objective. Pedagogically, there are a number of factors that could be considered, but Harvey and colleagues chose to explore Jenny's case from the coach and coaching perspective. In short, they suggested that if Jenny continues on her current path, one without the opportunity she wants and has been provided with, at least in hockey, she may only reach a certain level of her potential. She needs to develop her game performance, and this means working with a coach who subscribes to ideas of enjoyment and success, the notion of deliberate practice, and family, school, and club support. Gaining access to the regional performance centre is vital to Jenny if she is going to develop physically and in her gameplay. She will need access to coaches with greater professional knowledge and work in more game-situated practices, which is important to a longer-term learning and development as well as performance, The positive pedagogical approach subscribed to by her national governing body means that she will, hopefully, work with coaches who are more aware of the different coach behaviours they use and who focus less on what the player does and more on how she can improve her game performance. Her involvement might also allow her to access travel funding, and it could develop a social network and allow her to travel with someone from her own town. Further benefits could be gained as she could gain access to facilities at a school at lunchtime. These come at no additional cost. So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, your sessions and your context? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com/news.aspx. Thanks for listening and join me next week for the next Pepin podcast where I'll discuss the pedagogical case about Tony. Acknowledgements. I would like to thank Vicky Goodyear for her work behind the scene as copy editor. Her help certainly forms a vital part of the production of this podcast and in getting it out on time and in a semblance of coherence. However, it is important to note that any mistakes that remain are mine. Thank you. We'll be right back.